Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
So it's football season here at VSiN, which is why we've already released our NFL betting guide. Our NFL betting guide is going to help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season. You got in-depth profiles of every team, including advanced stats and best bets on season win totals and more. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You get it as low as $19, or take advantage of the summer kickoff special. You get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $175. VSiN.com/subscribe for details. We'll always stress everything we do through the Super Bowl. That would include, of course, the college football betting guide, which emails are out. Data is being collected, and it is being written. And one of the men who is going to be behind the words of the college football betting guide, Tim Murray, who also does a fantastic college football betting podcast and a college basketball betting podcast, is with us here today. Tim, good to talk to you. So I wanted to start with, you just had an episode recently about the Pac-12, but also we're discussing some quarterback transfers, and I wanted to go there because it ties into the Pac-12. I think one of the more intriguing teams in the Pac-12 is Oregon State. Obviously, we know last year, I think they finished the best betting team in the country, right, in terms of ATS. They get DJU. I'm really intrigued by what DJU can bring to Oregon State. I think he is better. You know, you've talked about this. It's been something that has been brought up in mass media. Clemson's offensive scheme wasn't really great last year. What is the ceiling for an Oregon State team that now is not going to take the country by storm? Like, people are going to know. They're going to know how well power-rated they are, and that they have a guy like DJU on the roster. What is the expectation for him and for Oregon State this year?
Yeah, it's a team that I've played their win total over, and, we always mention this. Look, depending on what state you're in, where you can bet, I bet 8, and I bet that last week. You can find that in Nevada at a couple shops, including Circa, at 8. So we're looking at the screen right now from DraftKings, JBT, and it's 8.5. Certainly, I would recommend go get the 8. You can get plus money on over 8.5. But no, your point is what I've discussed quite a bit regarding Oregon State. I remember I did a segment, you know, right after the national championship, kind of more of your typical sports talky type of segment. And I said, who could be next year's TCU? And I think Oregon State has the potential to take the college football world by storm in this regard. You know, the Pac-12, and when you're playing any win totals, you know, we had humans on Follow the Money when I was filling in earlier this week, JVT, and he talked about his bet on Louisville on their win total over, and a lot of it had to do with the schedule, right? Because they were not playing Clemson and Florida State, the two best teams in the ACC. Well, look at Oregon State's schedule. They don't play USC. I mean, that's a nice team to miss. They get Utah. They get UCLA. They get Washington. Mm-hmm. Thought to be three of the best teams in the Pac-12, all at home. Corvallis is a very challenging place to play. I believe they're 12-1 straight up at home the last 2 years, JVT. The only loss coming against a USC team in September last year, in which they covered and they had plenty of chances to win that game. And then they wrap up the season at Oregon, which certainly will be a challenging spot. You know, the Civil War, Oregon and Oregon State, and Oregon State actually beat them last year. But, you know, outside of the schedule, why do I like Oregon State? You mentioned DJU. I think Jonathan Smith, who is their head coach, former Oregon State quarterback, kind of a quarterback whisperer, so to speak. You know, you don't get a lot of former five-star recruits up there in Corvallis. So I think there's a potential to unlock some big-time potential from DJU. It's not like he was just straight-up terrible his entire career at Clemson, right? I mean, his second career start on the road at Notre Dame, he threw for over 400 yards in that, you know, double overtime loss to Notre Dame back in the COVID season. They bring back a ton on the offensive side of the ball. They bring back all three of their top rushers. Damian Martinez is a stud. I mean, the one big loss, in my opinion, is their linebacker Spates, who hit the transfer portal, went to LSU. Would have loved to see him come back this year. But no, I like Oregon State a lot. I think this is a 9, you know, maybe even 10 win football team. You know, if the, you know, things roll their way, I love the fact that, you know, their road games, JVT, are games that they should probably be a favorite in, at Washington State, at Cal, at Colorado, and then Oregon, they'll be an underdog. But no, Oregon State, very intriguing team, and a play that I do have in pocket on over 8 on the Beavers.
I was surprised to hear that. I figured they'd be 2 touchdown underdogs at Colorado on November 4th, considering what Prime's got going on there.
Hey, is that some shade being thrown at the most popular bet in all of college football?
The under?
No.
No. Trust me, I'm with you. That's it's going to be look at the very least.
Can I just jump in there real quickly? Because JVT Colorado, like I am so intrigued by them. I thought, look, all kidding aside, you know, I thought the hire was great. I don't know how many segments we did after Deion Sanders was hired on Colorado. Let's remember, this was without a doubt, in my opinion, the worst Power Five program last year. They were god awful, 1-11. And now you've got buzz. How good will they be? I honestly have no idea, JVT. I was hoping we could get like a 5.5 out there. I think the market's probably right. 3.5 is probably right for Colorado. A lot of talent, but you know, the question that I have certainly is up front, you know, the lines. They got a lot of skill position players that came in through the portal and the depth. Like what is this depth gonna look like up there? In Colorado, but first two games of the year, both big noon kickoffs on Fox. So plenty of eyeballs will be on Coach Prime in year one.
You said what I was going to say pretty much, which is look, at the end of the day, somebody who had no interest in Colorado football, is going to watch the most Colorado football I've ever watched in my life. So Prime's at least doing that for the Buffaloes. All right, I wanted to stick with the theme of transfer quarterbacks. Again, the most recent pod for you, you can go check it out up on Tim Murray's feed at One Tim Murray up on Twitter, or of course the College Football Betting Podcast. Just go like, rate, review, and subscribe. Talk to Matt Fortuna about Northwestern, Pat Fitzgerald, and of course the quarterback transfers into Power Five programs. Let's talk about your guys, because Sam Hartman goes into there to Notre Dame on paper, right? The biggest fish to land for Notre Dame to get a quarterback of that nature. However, my question for you is, how does Sam Hartman transfer, I guess we'll say, into that system offensively from that slow mesh RPO style offense from Wake Forest? Do you think there's going to be some growing pains there?
I don't, because I think it's more of the slow mesh was kind of to help mask the lack of offensive linemen that they had at Wake. Wake's had some big time wide receivers, and obviously the prolific nature of the numbers that Sam Hartman put up, record setting in the ACC. But you know, Sam Hartman's now going to get an opportunity, and I forget who mentioned this on Twitter, so I apologize. I'm not giving proper credit, but basically they looked at Sam Hartman from a clean pocket over the last 2 years. Only Bryce Young had a better, you know, quarterback rating essentially than Sam Hartman. So look, I think him going into that offensive line with a pretty good stable of running backs is big there for the Irish. But look, I'm not racing to play over 8.5, JVT. And honestly, if you know, when I write this up for the guide, because I'm gonna write up the independents, and you know, the number's 9 at DraftKings, my recommendation is going to be under, because, you know, Marcus Freeman's entering year 2. And while Sam Hartman is the best quarterback, in my opinion, to start a season for the Irish, probably since Brady Quinn back in 2005, you know, you've got Ohio State. You're a touchdown underdog at home against Ohio State. You're a pick'em against USC. You're a road dog at Clemson. So can you win one of those toss-up games? Or because if you don't, JVT, then you have to essentially run the table with some tricky landmines, right? A Duke team that won 9 games last year on the road a week after playing Ohio State, which will be an emotionally charged stadium, at Louisville with Jeff Brohm stepping in there where he's made his hay, you know, upsetting teams. Think back to Purdue just bludgeoning Ohio State on that Saturday night in West Lafayette a couple years ago. They got NC State on the road. They got Pittsburgh at home off a bye week. So, yeah, I think there's a couple landmines. And, you know, let's be honest, Marcus Freeman, year number 1, had some really high highs, beating Clemson in the fashion that they did, JVT. But he also had some incredible lows, losing to Marshall, losing to a terrible Stanford team. So not a play that I have in pocket, but as a Notre Dame fan, I am certainly intrigued and excited about what Sam Hartman can bring to the Irish, because I truly believe he is the best quarterback they've probably had in almost 2 decades.
Don't forget the less than enthusiastic win over UNLV last year as well. By the way, 60 touchdowns to 14 interceptions and a PFF passing grade of about 92 for Sam Hartman in a clean pocket over the last 2 years. So pretty good numbers for a guy like Hartman. All right, last 60, it's probably not enough. The ramifications of Fitzgerald from a football perspective for Northwestern are what?
Look, the fact of the matter is this. They were a terrible football team last year with Pat Fitzgerald on the sidelines. Pat Fitzgerald, you know, as a coach, and this has nothing to do with all the allegations, as a coach, JVT, did a tremendous job at a very challenging place to win. You know, won a couple division titles, but look at the last 2 years, 3-9, 1-11 last year. No wins in America, which is always a fun little nugget there. Their lone win was in Ireland against Nebraska. So, you know, win total sitting out there earlier this week at 3.5 when all this news came out, I would say absolutely run to the under on that one. Only four players return on the offensive side of the ball. So I feel for a lot of these Northwestern players. You know, it might be a situation, though, JVT, to be honest, where the market's going to go so crazy that, right, you know, at some point we may have to look at ourselves and see if we'll take some points with the Purple Cats. But I'm not there yet. They're going to be really, really bad.
Make sure you check out the College Football Betting Podcast, a must-listen for me every time a new one comes out. Tim, they're awesome. You're awesome. Thanks for the time, buddy.
JVT, our home and home is complete. Thanks for coming on my show last night.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, it's very true. All right, one Tim Murray up on Twitter. Primetime, by the way, the show. Check that out later today. We'll be back here on The Numbers Game.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
No, you know what, Kelly? Let's do this. Let's talk about the minutiae of our job on the air. We were discussing our schedule and whatnot. I think people think it's really radio and television.
We got some scheduling to figure out over the next couple days. We're busy.
What is on my face?
I don't know. Like, you're using that camera as a mirror.
Do I have a freckle on my face? I never even noticed that sometimes. Oh, whatever. It gets lost in my jowls, maybe. You don't see it. All right. That's such an underrated word. I love jowls. You know what I mean? It's a good
jowls,
word.
Jowls, yeah.
How often do you use that thing, huh?
Never, yeah.
Unless we're talking about dogs. All right. With that, we were talking about DeAndre Hopkins and his destination. Obviously, the team that is favored is in the AFC South. So let's discuss this really quickly. So I've got thoughts. Obviously, I'm a Colts fan. So do you have thoughts about what the Colts' future ultimately brings? But at the top of the division is the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are the odds-on favorite to win this thing at -165, to win the conference at 12-1, championship at 25-1, win total of 9.5. I would say the Jags are what I qualify as a sexy team, right? A lot of people think that there's a high ceiling for Jacksonville after the way last year ended. Went on a pretty solid run, got into the postseason, came back against the Los Angeles Chargers, and won that game. Like, we all know how it went last year. And so the thought is that there's some real potential here for Jacksonville. And I don't necessarily disagree. And I actually thought this, Kelly, so as we started the top of the division, the rightful favorites. One of the things that I kind of wanted to do with Jacksonville, they have by win projections, by win total projections, the 11th easiest schedule in the NFL, somewhere in that range. I do think there's a universe in which Jacksonville, much like the Tennessee Titans from a couple of years ago, come out and take advantage of an easy schedule and could compete for the top seed in the AFC.
Oh, like, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, yep. And I bring up those Titans specifically because if you remember that year, and obviously you have their schedule in front of you, we'll go over momentarily, but if you remember the year the Titans won it, every single number screamed at you, this team is not that good, right? They were getting ridiculous results, all that. But I think that there's a universe in which this schedule breaks for them to a point where they could take advantage of it and be a one seed in, like, number and record, but in terms of power rating, still below those teams like Buffalo, like the Kansas City Chiefs. And I don't think it's unrealistic for this to happen. I mean, you look at this schedule overall, there are some tough spots that they have to take care of, right? But for the Bills, for example, like all of their big boys, Chiefs, they get them at home. Bills, they get them in London, but it's the second week. It's consecutive London weeks where they're going to be there waiting for the Buffalo Bills, a small advantage in that regard. The other ones, they get the 49ers at home. They get the Bengals at home. So the tough challenges for them, the Ravens, at home, they're going to be able to, at the very least, host them. And again, conversations about home field, probably worth more than just about 1.5 points or so. It's not worth that much, but still an advantage nonetheless. You at least get to play them on your own territory for the most part. The other opponents, like their road games, really not terrible, right? The divisional games, of course. And then you look at some other spots on the record that, like, the rest of the time, Kelly, you look at the schedule and go, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here this Jacksonville team to, again, just build up a record against some lesser opponents. And look at those last 3 weeks as well. If we're right about the Tennessee Titans kind of folding by the time we get to midseason, whatever it's going to be, or just look at the back end of the schedule overall, that three-week stretch against the AFC North is going to be pretty tough, right? Bengals, Browns, Ravens. But if you start at week 11 and go on, Titans, Texans, then Bengals, Browns, Ravens, and then Bucks, Panthers, Titans, like, that could be a stretch where you, what, lose two of the three, you know, take one of those AFC North games.
Sure.
And all of a sudden you're like, hey, man, like we're cooking with fire. Like we could get something here in terms of a pretty good record. Again, we're talking about odds to win the AFC one seed. You know, you want like double digits somewhere in that range. Like that's something I think that is worth looking at for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I completely agree. That is, let me just make sure I'm not misremembering anything. Yeah, that is the only NFL future bet I've actually made so far is the Jags to win this division.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very high on them. I think your points of everything regular season are right. I think they're they're interesting to look at for, you know, over win total, maybe over alt over win total, the number one seed in the AFC. I don't think that they stand a chance once they get to the playoffs, but this is all about the division that they play in. And these three other teams just not being anywhere close to them, in my opinion. And I look, the Titans, we kind of talked about it last segment. I really think that's going to end up being a rebuilding project midway through the year. I would think their biggest threat in the division, in all likelihood, is probably your Indianapolis Colts. But, you know, we look at that schedule again. You get to play the Colts early. You get both those games out of the way early. Yep. So if you think there's going to be a curve for Anthony Richardson learning the offense there, I think it's better to play him early, and you're getting both those games out of the way in the first 6 weeks. You know, you can even throw Stroud in there. They played Texans week three in that, you know, a little later on as their second game. But I think that part's big when we talk about that team. The Colts, I don't know how you feel about them, but they would probably be my pick for finishing second in this division. But, like, I think it's going to be a Jacksonville runaway. And even I bet it at -160. I think it's still around, like, -165, 170. I think it's still worth a bet.
Yeah, I would agree. Indianapolis, so there's obviously a lot of easy comparisons to make with Anthony Richardson and Justin Fields. And the fact that, you know, Fields, Richardson could have a Fields-like season like he did last year. Fields was electric on offense, absolutely tremendous on the ground, and helped make that Bears team a little bit more fun in terms of the way that they were scoring. However, of course, they finished with the worst record because the defense was atrocious and he wasn't getting much help. The argument you make here for Indianapolis is he could have the Fields season, but with a much better roster around him than what Justin Fields had last season. Yeah. You know, he's got a dominant backfield mate in Jonathan Taylor. You know, he has an offensive line that still has some talent there, a skill position group that is a little bit better than what the Chicago Bears had a season ago, and a defense that has some pretty decent talent on it, and a coaching staff, too, geared offensively that could maximize some of his talents as a quarterback. I'd agree with you. Am I rushing to go bet over the win total for Indianapolis? I'm not entirely sure about that. But I do think on a week-to-week basis, if it's going to be Anthony Richardson to start, there is some intriguing looking at an Indianapolis team that's going to be an underdog, I think, in every game but one so far this season as it projects out, to look at like betting them against the spread somewhat regularly, because I think they'd be a lot more formidable to certain opponents than you would think. And the first portion of that schedule, you have some interesting opportunities for Indianapolis. You know, you mentioned the home game against Jacksonville. You have to go to the Houston Texans, which is a winnable game because those are two evenly matched teams, a coin flip spot. On the road against the Ravens is going to be, you would think, a pretty solid number to catch against the Baltimore Ravens, barring anything crazy in the first couple of weeks of the season. Home against the Rams is winnable. Home against the Titans is winnable. Like, if you go through the schedule, there are opportunities for Indianapolis to go over that win total. A lot of it depends on, of course, Anthony Richardson. But the back end of the schedule, too, Kelly, for them as well. Like, they got one of the easier schedules. Look after that bye. Buccaneers, Titans, Bengals, Steelers, Falcons, Raiders, Texans.
Yeah.
Like, those are teams you can make an argument, especially a couple of them, I would say. We know the obvious candidates, but the Titans and the Raiders specifically make an argument that those two might be competing for a top five pick by the time we get to that portion of the season.
I think those are good bets in the worst record market. Yeah.
So since we're talking about the AFC South, there's two, we'll call them like extreme bets, I guess you want to call them. Like Jags to potentially win the one seed in the AFC, mm-hmm. Titans to finish with the worst record as well. I think those are two worth looking at because as we've talked about already, if the Tannehill decline continues and you have Will Levis, who you spent a somewhat high pick on, you're going to look around and go at some point, all right, if we're 1-5, whatever it is, we need to see what we have here. Mm-hmm. Let's turn this over and let's just see what Levis is. Let's just let him work out the kinks as the season goes along. It could lead to a season in which you find yourself, you know, in that 4-12, 3-14 range. Yep. Like it could get really bad. You know, Vrabel's awesome and he maximizes a lot of what that team has. But I think overall, there are more realities in which that simulation comes out with a lot more outcomes on the bottom end like that than the record would indicate, or excuse me, that the probability would indicate when you look at the odds for worst record.
Yeah, I agree. Those are two I have written down because I don't think we have anybody in Nevada yet that has that market.
You don't have to ask.
I literally have it written down though. I will be betting the Raiders and the Titans in that market because we've looked at that all summer. I think the odds that correlate with them, I think, are.
By the way, I shouldn't just
off.
Say that. I'm going to go look.
Either way, they're way off. Like those are, I think they're absolutely prime candidates in the Titans as you broke it down. And just going back to the Colts real quick, I mean, that could be, we're talking midway through the season where the Titans might be completely switching things around and the Colts might be, and Anthony Richardson might be hitting his stride. You know, you talk about that soft end of the year schedule for the Colts. Well, Anthony Richardson at that point, that's basically a full college season. He'll have under his belt already. Maybe he's really putting things together when he's playing Steelers, Falcons, Raiders, Texans. Could give your Colts a little bit of a nice run at the end.
By the way, that's why something in my memory said, don't say that. I think there's somebody out there. Circa does have most, at the very least, don't have one seed, but they do have most regular season losses, most regular season wins. Tennessee Titans 21-1 to finish with the most regular season losses.
I'm in.
Yeah. There is an outcome there. And the last team, then we didn't really spend any time on the Houston Texans. The Texans are a team that should be, at least from a personnel standpoint, they look like they could be a lot better, at least in comparison with what they were last season. Now, 6.5 does seem like a really high win total for me. Like to ask this team to go 7-10 or better, I think that's a little strong given what we look at with this roster and the questions about what you're going to have at quarterback. But when you tie in the schedule and what they have improvements, the improvements that they made on the roster, you can understand it. Like, especially that first column of the schedule before the bye, when you're talking about winnable games and coin flip spots, essentially, home versus the Colts, home versus the Steelers, on the road against the Falcons, home versus the Saints, those are some, and when you come back out of it with Panthers and Buccaneers, plus with the Cardinals there too, like, this is a schedule that at least gives them some opportunity that they're going to be able to take advantage of and go over. But I would rather err on the side of caution and look at this thing under 6.5. And I think the market's right in shading that under. 6.5 was pretty strong for me.
Yeah, I'm gonna split the difference kind of how you phrased it at the beginning. I'm like, the roster's better. I don't know if it's a lot better. And 6.5, I think, is a little too rich for me still.
All right, let's take our break. When we come back, we have plenty to get to. We'll get to those divisions and win totals in the NBA. And we'll talk about that team that I referenced that love what they did in the offseason and really do think that they have a shot to, yes, maybe even grab the one seed in the Eastern Conference.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive too fast, you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing because one way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for Gil Alexander on a numbers game today. Let's head out and welcome in our next guest, friend of the program, dare I say, one Adam Burke. Adam, good morning. Appreciate the time. I'm going to open with this. It was a conversation we had. The weirdest place you have fallen asleep in your life, where?
Wow. Well, good morning, boys, first. The weirdest place I've fallen asleep.
It's a hard-hitting question to start the day, Adam.
Oh, you know what? Actually, so the first time we came to Vegas, we did one of those timeshare presentations, and we got tickets for Phantom of the Opera. I don't remember if it was a Winter Venetian, but I fell asleep there.
Like during the show?
That's a good one.
During the show.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. So if it's the one I'm thinking of, because I've been to Phantom of the Opera, my wife likes that stuff, so I took her. And the one we went to had a big fake chandelier that fell from the ceiling as part of the act. Ah, that's a good place to fall asleep. All right, I'm down.
That's a good one.
Yeah, by the way, I hate musicals too. I don't know if I'm assuming you don't like musicals, but I'm kind of out on stuff like that. All right, good start. All right, Adam, well, we're not going to fall asleep on the second half of the MLB season. So I want to ask you, we have a full slate of games tomorrow, but this is kind of like a vague and open-ended question, but it's team specific. Top of your list, what are you looking for as we start the second half? Is it a regression for a certain team? Is it an ascension from a certain team? Is it player regression? What is one thing at the top of your list that you are waiting to find out as we start the second half of the MLB season?
Yeah, I think there are a few things, actually. If I narrowed it down to one, I really want to bet on the Detroit Tigers in the second half, which I know sounds ludicrous because they're just not a very good baseball team, but they've had a competent major league rotation on the injured list basically all season long. They just got Tarek Skubal back. Eduardo Rodriguez came back. Matt Manning has been back as well. So their starting pitching has gotten substantially better over the last couple of weeks just from guys coming back from injury. So I think they will be an undervalued team that's worth playing, whether it's taking some first fives with those guys. I know they just threw the combined no-hitter the other day, but maybe taking some first fives, some plus 1.5 run lines when they're in big underdog situations, stuff like that. Their pitching staff will be dramatically better in the second half if those guys are able to stay healthy. So that's a team that I'm actually looking to hopefully make some money on that I think could be undervalued as we go forward.
Is that a pitching staff that, it, like, as we move to the trade deadline, is that one that's going to get picked apart? Like, Eduardo Rodriguez was a guy that was obviously thrown out there at the beginning part of the year that could have some value. Are guys like him in danger of being shipped off?
I think a guy like Michael Lorenzen possibly could be, but other than that, I mean, a lot of these are younger guys that they have that they're trying to, you know, kind of figure out what they have. Reese Olson's been a guy that's been pretty interesting in a bulk capacity that maybe he, you know, winds up having a pretty good second half. But, you know, Rodriguez is a guy still under a contract where he's had some injury issues. He had some personal stuff that kept him away from the team last season. I don't think he's a super tradable contract for them. But the young guys like Manning and Skubal, those are guys that they want to try to build around. So I don't think that they'll be a team picked apart at the trade deadline. They don't really have a ton to offer, maybe some relievers, something like that, which is another reason why I'd look at first fives. But they don't really have a whole lot of currency that they can move around at the deadline here.
So the other team that stuck out to me that, because there's a lot of things you can bet on now as we head into the second half, you still have some regular season win totals that are up. So the St. Louis Cardinals, right now, they are 38-52, Adam. There seems to be maybe some increased rumblings that this team could potentially start to sell themselves. What do you make of that? Have you read anything that that would be the case? And if that is the case, their win total right now is 75.5. That would look to me like an underplay if this is a team that is already underwhelming as it stands right now and willing to ship off some of their better pieces.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, you know, this is a team that just everyone kind of has been waiting and waiting and waiting for them to get it going, and it hasn't happened, and I don't think that it's going to. And when you look at the starting pitching market that's out there, you know, because the Phillies got back into the race, Aaron Nola, who is an impending free agent, probably won't go anywhere. Milwaukee still has as good of a chance in the Central Division as they did probably before the season, so Corbin Burns probably won't go anywhere. And I think the Guardians will still be reluctant to trade Shane Bieber, although they probably shouldn't be. So Jordan Montgomery and Jack Flaherty are two guys that look very, very attractive on the trade market here. Montgomery specifically, I would say he's pretty much a lock to get traded. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Flaherty is as well. And I don't see the Cardinals really committing long-term dollars to him. So I think Flaherty and Montgomery will absolutely go. The question is who else goes? I mean, could St. Louis trade a Paul Goldschmidt? I think that's very, very much a possibility. Could they trade one of their younger position players to maybe get a young starting pitcher, maybe a swap with Cleveland where they get, say, a Logan Allen, somebody like that? I think that's a possibility as well. The Cardinals are very, very much open for business. This is a rare spot for them, though, because they've had, what, two losing seasons, I think, in the last 25 years. So I think if you're John Mozeliak and the rest of the front office, as much as it stinks to be as bad as they are, you have to capitalize on this situation and get better from the minor league system up. And I think they can do that via trade. And I think they absolutely will.
All right, let's stay in the division. Right now, as it stands, Cincinnati has a one-game lead over Milwaukee. Milwaukee, though, the odds-on favorite ever so slightly at DraftKings at minus 110. They are now in the midst of a stretch two, Adam. You know, we pull into the first half. A stretch where, of five series, they're going to play three against one another here as we enter the second half. They got two coming up. So what do we make of this division race? Because these next couple of weeks are going to be very impactful. Are the Brewers still, rightfully so, the odds-on favorite to win this division with the Reds in the way that they have played as of late?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule is tricky. They come out of the break, play Milwaukee right away, four with the Giants, who are a very good team. Arizona's a team that I'm kind of looking to fade in the second half, so maybe that'll be an opportunity for me to bet on Cincinnati in that series coming up here next weekend. But then, as you mentioned, Milwaukee again, they play three against the Dodgers on the road. Then it maybe softens up a little bit for them. Look, I mean, offensively, this team is clearly, very clearly, the best in the division. It's kind of a matter to me of, does Andrew Abbott keep doing what he's doing? Can Brandon Williamson keep going out there and avoid getting blown up and give this team a chance to win more often than not? is Graham Ashcraft going to be any good whatsoever in the second half? And how quickly can they get Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo back? What they've done to this point, missing Green and Lodolo over the last few weeks, is thoroughly impressive. And the other thing about Cincinnati, because they've developed so well from within, even though they graduated McLean and De La Cruz and Steer to the big leagues and Christian Encarnacion Strand will come soon, they still have enough second-tier prospects that they can be a buyer here at the trade deadline. I don't know that Milwaukee has a whole lot that they can move around to try and add, because when Burns is gone, Brandon Woodruff's getting older, they may not want to mortgage too much of the future. I think Cincinnati is in a position to do that with guys that aren't at the big league level yet. So I think the Reds, if they want to, if ownership will sign off on it, can be the more aggressive team. And I do think Cincinnati ultimately does win that division.
So let's tie in the Reds on one more thing. One of the most, one of the more irritating topics that come up in an NBA season for me, Adam, is with some of these awards, specifically when you get like Rookie of the Year, right? Where you'll get a rookie that gets off to a strong, a really strong start, is very consistent throughout an entire year. But then you get another rookie, Jalen Smith at the end of last year, who had a really strong second half. And people were like, he could be Paolo Banchero. Wasn't the case. I'm bringing that up because I want to compare it with the race between Corbin Carroll and Ellie De La Cruz. There's a reality, I think, right, where the market and bettors are all over this. Like, hey, watch out. Ellie De La Cruz could win this thing. And the price on Carroll becomes a little bit cheaper, right? Like, Carroll's going to win this thing if he maintains play, because Ellie De La Cruz has not played enough. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think Carroll just had so much of a head start on him. But, of course, the shoulder issue. I mean, that seems like it's something that possibly could linger a little bit. Maybe the All-Star break helps him. It is a shoulder that he had surgically repaired a couple of years ago, but that threw a massive scare into a lot of people, not only seeing the injury, but then seeing Torey Lovullo throw him right back in there the next night, which seemed to make no sense whatsoever. Carroll should still win this award. I mean, Carroll was still second for the MVP, second or third in the National League. I mean, to be up there and not win the Rookie of the Year would be ludicrous. What Ellie De La Cruz is doing is awesome, and he's a human highlight reel, but Carroll's numbers are off the charts good. He basically led the National League in F-War in the first half as a rookie, which is incredible. So it's his award to lose, and if he gets hurt, he could very well lose it. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think at minus 300, we're starting to get to a point where maybe he is sort of worth the investment, despite the fact that De La Cruz, is so exciting and has grabbed so many headlines here.
All right, last minute. I have been adamant. I don't think people understand the Artie Moreno dynamic of it. Ohtani's not going anywhere at the trade deadline, correct? I'm right about this?
I mean, look, the baseball decision is to trade him. The correct. Artie Moreno decision is I don't want to be the guy who traded Shohei Ohtani, also because correct. Moreno already has enough kind of going on in the PR realm. So I don't know. I would trade him. I would absolutely trade him. I would get the best return I possibly could, because my farm system is terrible and the Angels farm system has been bad for a very long time.
Whoa.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he'll ultimately sign off on it. He should, but he probably won't, and it'll be to the organization's detriment for several years to come.
The Artie Moreno, the guy who took his team off the market because he was mad everybody was happy he was selling it? Nah, he would never do that. Adam Burke, good to talk to you, man. Thanks, buddy.
Have a good one, guys.
Skating Tripods up on Twitter. Yeah, at the base, I would agree with that. Baseball move, yes. Artie Moreno move, absolutely not. All right, we'll come back, wrap it up. Last 10 minutes here on A Numbers Game.